Welcome to our show. Before we start, did you know that you could support our show by pushing the patron button at our website, thebillshow.net? You'll be helping us pay the bills and continue to provide you with what we do every fortnight. Political insights and progressive news, including some of the most recent clips from the U.S. political scene. Just click patron at thebillshow.net, and for the cost of a cappuccino a month, you can help us maintain our show. Thanks. Now on with the show.
The words that have been flung out from his mouth to are insane.
You, a nasty woman, we hear you say, hell yeah.
We're going to hold on to him by the nose, and we're going to kick him in the ass. We're going to kick the hell out of him all the time, and we're going to go through him like crap through a goose.
From the expat home of the resistance, it's the Bill Show. And now, brothers and sisters in solidarity, here's Bill and Randy.
Hello.
To say hell yeah,
hell yeah,
hell yeah,
hell yeah.
You're an angry woman, gonna go through you like fat through a goose, gonna hold him by the nose, and we're gonna kick him in the ass. I just love that. I love that opening.
Do you love that opening?
I love that. Bill, you never cease to surprise me. I always enjoy it. I hope our listeners do too. Hello, listeners.
Hello, guys. Hello, everybody out there.
In little old podcast land?
In podcast land, absolutely. Yeah. It's a little get-together. We decided to get together a little bit early this time because Trump's been busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he and Vlad...
He and Vlad have been very busy.
They've been playing the dating game?
They have. And they, you know, I do love it when the kids put on a show.
Yeah, they shot
especially,
off...
Especially...
They shot off...
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
They shot off 59 half-million-dollar Tomahawk missiles, which would have probably paid for Meals on Wheels or something.
Well, but it killed like six guys in an empty airfield. We're gonna go on. We'll talk into it. But
I know. But I just thought this guy is you know, he's got his distraction now.
Yes, he does.
He's got a little bit of a chubby going on there. Like he thinks he's.
Can you play Wag the Dog? I know I can, and I know they are.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is also in the framework of being a war crime, because Uncle Vlad likes reality in his little, you know, his pageants.
How come young Donald, how come 45, suddenly discovered that there are people in Syria that he's been telling for the last 6 months to fuck off.
Yeah.
Don't come to my country.
Donald's developed a conscience. Suddenly,
well, no, he's developed
after
a conscience
years.
For Syrians, Muslims. Yeah.
Hey,
what's
hey
with
Donald,
that?
Donald, here's a great idea. If you're really sad about Syrian children, why don't you let more of them into the country?
Yeah, why don't you let any of them into the country?
Why don't you let any of them into the country? I kind of think that you're full of shit. I do. I kind of think the whole thing's full of shit. And to illustrate that point, I'm going to start off, ladies and gentlemen, with our Trump intro because he's been a busy boy. Here it is. Welcome again to the Twilight Zone.
This is a song about being happy. That's right. It's the happy, happy, joy, joy song.
This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th President of the United States. Donald Trump, President of the United States. Donald Trump, President of the United States. Donald Trump, Donald Trump, President of the United States.
Let's say China.
China.
China. China.
China.
China.
China.
China.
China.
Now it's time for the next episode of Donald Trump, American President.
China.
China. China.
China.
China.
China.
China.
China.
China.
Yes, Randy, as I was saying, I do love it so when the kids put on a show.
Yeah.
And Donald's
let's
very,
say China.
Yeah, China.
Yeah. He's down there.
Let's gas some kids and put it on everybody's television screen and see what happens. So that Donald can change the subject. You know, ladies and gentlemen, my thesis statement on this entire thing is that we've been talking about this for months. We've been sitting there. Randy, you know this. We've been talking about what is going to happen. What is going to be the thing internationally?
That he's going to do.
Yeah, that's going to change the subject.
To take the blowtorch off his own belly.
Well, my hypothesis... Bent on cynicism, kind of.
Oh, yeah, you're eating a whole plate of cinnamon toast, yeah.
I kind of think I'm kind of right.
I think you are, too.
Is that there was a conversation in the Oval Office, or in the Kremlin, actually. I think this conversation
happened. No, it was down at Marine Del Lago.
No. This whole thing was too smart for Donald.
Somebody else did it for him.
Daddy put this one together. Ladies and gentlemen, this is an actual tape conversation that I'm sure took place inside the Kremlin a couple months ago or a month ago or something like that. Here it is.
Okay. And you want me to do what?
We want you to produce.
You want me to produce your war?
Not a war. It's a pageant. We need a theme, a song, some visuals. We need, you know, it's a pageant. It's like the Oscars. That's why we came to you.
Yeah,
is that Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty?
It's Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, 1997, Wag the Dog.
Yeah.
And ladies and gentlemen, it is a pageant.
Mm-hmm. It's just like the Oscars.
It's an American pageant with, minority kids getting gassed and drowning in their own blood. That's Vladimir's idea of a Christmas show.
Yeah.
You got to understand, like, for him, this is like a Christmas show. Mm-hmm. And his Christmas show includes Syrian kids dying. You know,
yeah, and apparently with American sarin gas.
With American sarin gas, I'm going to quote actually, and I'm going to develop this case right now for you, and you see if it buzzes with me, okay? Because I've been watching and reading since this happened.
I see you've been posting.
I've been busy.
Yeah,
and because I. You know, okay, this is the sources on these. This report includes CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post,
fake news,
the latest IBD TIPP polling, the Palmer Report, which I don't usually quote the Palmer Report, but I believe they are right, and also Lawrence O'Donnell. So have a listen to this. Let's start with three, and this is from the Palmer Report, okay? Let's start with three existing premises that are generally not in dispute. And he puts this together really well. Russia wants Assad to remain in power, largely for reasons of oil revenue.
Yeah.
Plus, it's one of the few naval ports that Russia has.
Yeah, okay? On the Black Sea,
Two, Donald Trump will not go against Russia's wishes on Syria, because he never goes against Russia on anything. In fact, Trump appointed the guy who gave him the Friendship Medal to be Secretary of State.
The guy who was
the Secretary of Commerce, by the way, who appointed. We did a thing on him recently. They showed a photo of all the people there in the Situation Room, but it wasn't the Situation Room. It was a conference. It was a place in the conference center at a hotel at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Everybody had those.
He wasn't going to give up his weekend away just to bomb Syria.
Yeah, and they also all have that kind of like little name tag at an Amway convention. Hi, my name is that guy. I'm Marcus. I'm Secretary of Commerce. And underneath it should say, I'm Marcus, Secretary of Commerce, who owns a bank that does Russia's laundry.
He was there when he launched the missile. Of the ruble kind, yeah.
Why the fuck is the Secretary of Commerce there in the, you know, in the Situation Room?
Well, because this whole war has got a lot to do with commerce.
No, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the Secretary of Commerce is really linked to Russian oligarchs, but that's me. Trump's approval rating is down to 34%, and is in danger of passing the point of no return, effectively ending his presidency. Now, there are today two related events, and that this wasn't today. This was a few days ago. Yeah. One, Assad launches a stunningly brazen chemical gas attack on his own people. It's terrible. There's a lot of media coverage, but it's not as big as the one in 2013. Then Rachel Maddow reports on her MSNBC show the night of the attack that Donald Trump and his administration have already secretly positioned hundreds of U.S. ground troops in Syria unannounced before the gas attack.
Yeah.
How did you know the gas attack was going to happen?
No, they were just there for the falafel. They were just there for the falafels.
Yes. Yeah. How did you know? You got to work on knowing when your entrance is.
And then he goes and tells the Russians, maybe you better not be at that airbase.
Yeah, that's right.
On Friday morning, okay.
There's more. According to the Washington Post, you had like close to 60 U.S. Tomahawk missiles that were used in the attack. Mm-hmm. Now, any one of those missiles could have been shot down by the S-400 weaponry, which Russia already has in place in Syria. They could have shot down every single one of those missiles.
They could.
But Russia chose not to. Why? Mm. Why would you choose not to shoot down these missiles?
Well, I thought these were the ones that went up.
These missiles, they let them through.
Yeah, aren't these the ones that go up the street and like turn the corner, like they did in Baghdad? Yeah.
The problem that Hillary already always had with going into Syria in a new fly zone was because of the S-400 weaponry that Russia had already installed there. Mm-hmm. And they can shoot down these kind of cruise missiles, and they didn't do it. Mm-hmm. Additionally, NBC is reporting on air that the U.S. strike only took out planes and fueling stations while leaving two airstrips intact.
Yeah.
The airstrips would have required significant reconstruction, but the equipment can theoretically be replaced tomorrow.
Of course.
The U.S. attack seemed tailored to make it look fierce to casual viewers at home while inflicting as little real damage on Assad's Air Force capability as possible. And my favorite one is this.
Yeah.
Pentagon spokesman Captain Jeff Davis said in an official statement following the attack, get this, Russian forces were notified in advance of the strike.
Yeah.
Which explains why destroyed. And it was just the six guys, I don't know, maybe they were just cleaners that got killed.
Poor guys.
Well, that shouldn't hurt. You know, that's not going to bother someone like Vladimir Putin. Trust me.
Or Assad. Yeah, no.
Or Assad. It. Assad gets off on this shit. But let's look. The truth is that there are many reasons to doubt why this is a real thing and not a staged incident. One is I'd like to, ladies and gentlemen, could I have a little music, please?
Oh, okay.
Some game show music. A little Jeopardy music, I think.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, with our Jeopardy music today is a history. Now, you remember in 2013, Donald Trump was criticizing Barack Obama for threatening to go into Syria over chemical warfare.
Of course.
And
without permission from Congress.
And without permission. So here are Donald Trump's top 10 reasons not to do what he just did yesterday.
Yeah.
There it is. Number 10. This is his first tweet. Remember all those freedom fighters in Syria want to fly planes into our buildings. Let the Arab League take care of Syria. He wrote this on August 29th, 2013. Why are these rich Arab countries not paying us for the tremendous cost of such an attack? This is August 31st. If Obama attacks Syria and innocent civilians are hurt or killed, he and the U.S. will look very bad. Very bad.
Oh, no. Oh, very bad.
Very bad.
Very bad.
What will we get for bombing Syria besides our debt and a possible long-term conflict? Obama needs congressional approval.
I've got a hotel there. Don't bomb the hotel.
I got a hotel there. Don't do it. The president must get congressional approval before attacking Syria. And then he goes on, if we are going to continue to be stupid and go into Syria, I don't know, Donald. Are we? As they say in the movies, shirt first and talk later.
Yeah.
We have given Syria so much information here, time and information, that has ever been given in such an instance in world wartime history. Syria is fully prepared. Yeah, like when you call them before you launch the strike, Donnie.
Yeah.
No, Dopey, I would not go into Syria, but but if I did, it would be by surprise. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Unless
hey,
there was a
guess who it is.
Unless
yeah.
there was a fucking phone nearby where you could go. Excuse me, Vladimir. I'm setting off some of the sparkly things that they gave me to work with as president, just like you told me to. Just like, is it clear? Are all the airfields clear? Everything's cool? Okay, fine. I'll set them off. What's that? Oh, I already put my troops in before the gas attack.
Yeah.
Oh, I was supposed to do that after. Oh. Oh, Vladimir, sometimes I get so confused.
I don't think Trump knew that was. I don't think they'd tell him anything.
Well, listen, if you're wondering, first of all, there's no reason whatsoever that a guy who does not let immigrant kids into the country actually was against any intervention in Syria right up until, let me tell you, last week. Tillerson came on and said that the Syrian leadership or the leadership of Syria were no longer looking for the ouster of Assad, that it was a matter for the Syrian people. So why would Assad actually antagonize America after the Trump administration had already indicated that it wasn't going to seek his
disposal.
Removal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would he do it? The thing is, he didn't do it. The only reason he did it is because Ivan over there told him to. Absolutely. Now, if you want evidence of this, go back to... this is from Russ Wellen in Foreign Policy and Focus magazine. And it's a very good summary of a very little-known attack that catapulted Vladimir Putin into power. And I quote it. In September 1999, apartment buildings in Moscow, as well as Bunyaksk and Volgodonsk, I hate these Russian names, fuck it, killed almost 300 people and injured more than 1,000 more, supposedly the work of Chechen terrorists. They not only paved the way to the second Chechen war for Russia, but ushered a security-minded candidate, Vladimir Putin, into the presidency.
Vladimir Putin!
This is how he got in. It wasn't long, though, before the specter of the Russian intelligence service massacring its own people raised its ugly head. In 2002, an investigation by David Satter was published by the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Study. This is what they wrote. There was compelling evidence that, contrary to claims that the bombings were the work of Chechen terrorists, they were, in fact, carried out by the Russian government itself.
Sure.
First, the bombings came at a moment when the corrupt oligarchy that ruled Russia faced the loss of its power. The bombings, by seemingly to justify a new Chechen war, propelled Putin into power, and he preserved the oligarchy and the Yeltsin-era division of wealth and property in Russia intact. Yeah. Almost from the start, however, there were doubts about the timing of the bombings that could not have been better calculated to rescue the political fortunes of himself. Suspicions only deepened when a fifth bomb was discovered in the basement of a building in Ryazan, and I love this one. Those responsible for placing it turned out to be agents of the FSB, the former KGB. This is what Vladimir Putin does. That's how he got into power. A false flag operation that allowed a distraction from the corruption that would have removed him. He's very good at this. He's done it before.
Yeah, and now he's come out and said, oh yeah, but 95% of all terrorist attacks in the world are orchestrated by the CIA.
Well, that's very cute, but plus me, trust me, Vladimir is very good at this shit.
Yeah.
He's very good at this shit. Now, you may be wondering, how would Donald be able to arrange or know exactly what was going on if he did know about it? Go back just last week, okay? I'm going to read this from the New York Times.
Yeah.
United Arab Emirates arranged a secret meeting in January between Blackwater founder Eric Prince and a Russian close to President Vladimir Putin as part of an apparent effort, wait for it, to establish a back-channel line of communication between Vladimir Putin and President-elect
Donald Trump. Yep, that's right. The original backdoor.
Why do you need a back channel through your friends, Donnie?
Yeah.
Why are you getting Betsy Voss's brother, Betsy Voss, the person you nominated to be education secretary.
Yeah.
Her brother, is this guy, yeah. Eric Prince. So he sends a buddy, a loyalist, along with to meet a guy in the Arab Emirates. To meet an oligarch with very close ties to Vladimir. Personal ties.
Yeah.
So I'm just asking you, Donnie, why do you need a back channel through family? Why are you looking for that back channel, Donnie? Are you trying to say things to maybe Mr. Trump that you don't want people to know?
And of course, this is before he was actually president. Yeah.
No, it was after he was nominated.
Yeah, yeah, but it was
after he was elected, before he was sworn in January. When he was president-elect, one of the first things he did was to set up a back-channel communication to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, yeah, but the point is that he was not president yet, and he's come out and said, oh, no, none of
well,
this
Well, he wasn't sworn
before,
in, but he was president-elect.
Yeah.
Okay, he was going to be president. The first thing he does is send Betsy DeVos's brother off to the Arab Emirates to create a back channel of communication that no one else knows about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, just putting two and two together here. Listen, to end my thing, because I got a little bit long here.
Bill, it's your show.
I have. And there's not as much comedy here, because as much as I feel this is... you know, this is a distraction, and it is a pageant, just like Wag the Dog. It's a pageant.
Yeah.
This is also a war crime.
Yeah.
And if I think that my hunch is right, that both Putin and Trump knew about this, that this gassing was staged, then Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are both war criminals.
Yeah. But what's going to happen?
I don't know. I don't know, but we were
just get in line. Just get in line.
Well, that's it. That's it. We must not. I see the news today, and it's always very presidential. Even liberals are coming out. Lefties are coming out and saying, "Oh, well, you know, Hillary came out the other day and applauded the move." Guys,
yeah, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah,
this is the biggest shuck and jive. This is showbiz. This is exactly what it is, man. This is showbiz. This has nothing to do with anything other than distracting people away from the fact that the president of the United States is an asset of Russia.
And he's got approval ratings in the toilet.
In the toilet. Toilet. Okay. Listen, I will just cede the rest of my time to Lawrence O'Donnell, who voiced the same opinion on the last word, I think it was just the other night, two nights ago.
Okay.
Last night. Here it is, Lawrence O'Donnell, and then we'll be back for Randy's rant.
Ooh.
Here for 175. Here we go.
It's perfect. Just perfect. I wish it wasn't. If Vladimir Putin masterminded the last week in Syria, he has gotten everything he could have asked for. Vladimir Putin was essentially the man in charge of making sure that Syria got rid of all of its chemical weapons under a deal with the Obama administration. And so it makes perfect sense to question whether President Bashar al-Assad would have checked with his most important patron, Vladimir Putin, before using chemical weapons that Vladimir Putin was supposed to have helped get rid of. It would be terribly embarrassing to Vladimir Putin if President Assad had exposed Vladimir Putin as having completely failed to get rid of those chemical weapons. You wouldn't want to be Bashar al-Assad in a conversation with Vladimir Putin after that, unless you had a conversation with him before that. Unless Vladimir Putin said, I have an idea. Go ahead. Do a small chemical attack. Nothing like the big ones you've done in the past. Just big enough to attract media attention so that my friend in the White House will see it on TV. And then Donald Trump can fire some missiles at Syria that'll do no real damage. And then the American news media will change the subject from Russian influence in the Trump campaign and the Trump transition and the Trump White House. It's perfect. It doesn't just change the subject. For most of the news media, it changes the conventional wisdom about the dynamic between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. President Trump has finally dared to do something that Vladimir Putin doesn't like. It changes everything.
Educates, syncopates, radio communicates.
Now, here comes the music.
And finally, new role. Republicans have to learn the difference between being conservative and just being a dick. So much of what they have done since Trump took over isn't moving the party in a more conservative direction. It's also not a libertarian move. It's just a dick move. Take, for instance, the bizarre decision to reverse the ban on lead ammunition. For over a decade, we've been moving away from lead bullets because when a sportsman experiences the exquisite joy that comes from blowing the head off a chipmunk or a wolf and leaves it to rot, bald eagles eat the carcass, and when it has lead in it, it poisons them to death slowly and painfully. If it doesn't have lead, eagles, you know, the symbol of our fucking country, before they were replaced by a trucker hat. If it doesn't have lead in it, they don't die. Why not leave that rule alone? Because hunting is a sacred sport? Is it even really a sport? Is it a sport if one team doesn't know the game is going on? Were voters in 2016 asking that we poison eagles? Does it get anyone a job? Does it save money? Does it do anything conservatism is supposed to be about? No. It's just about some warped idea that the way to show strength is by being a dick. And that, in a nutshell, is what republicanism has become, looking at any problem and saying, what would a dick do? What would a dick do if there was a pesticide that was found to impair cognitive development in children? Use it, of course. Last week, our new anti-EPA, okayed the use of chlorpyrifos, which the Obama administration was in the process of banning because they had a no-tolerance policy on substances that can cause brain damage in children. But President Trump says, whatever, I ate paint chips as a kid. And look at me, I is president. But really, not even children in the mix stops you from the prime directive of being a dick. No, they see a chance to be a dick and they grab it. Same way they lost their minds when Michelle Obama tried to get kids to eat vegetables. Vegetables? What is this, a high school or a Whole Foods? And school lunch programs? That just encourages a dependency on food. No more free ride, you lazy six-year-olds. You want to eat? You do what kids in China do. So ties for President Trump. I understand, or at least I thought I did, Republican principles. Greed, fear, racism, sure. But why bring back asbestos? Yeah, asbestos, another dick move on their agenda. Who the fuck is still in the corner of big asbestos in 2017? When was the last time you heard someone say, yeah, we just bought a house, can't wait to move in, but not until we install the asbestos? Finally, what possible reason, other than spite, could they have for killing the agreement Obama made with the car companies to get all cars up to an average of 55 miles a gallon in 8 years? This was a done deal. An industry that we taxpayers bailed out and is now making record profits already agreed to it. It makes the air cleaner. It makes us more energy independent. It saves people money that they can spend on other things. It was a win, 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 win. That's called a no-brainer, which would lead you to believe even Republicans could get it right. All they had to do was nothing. Their specialty. But no, 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 no. It goes against the prime directive of, let's say it together, being a dick. Very good. They know carbon is killing the planet. They don't care because the main purpose of a car is to piss off liberals. Good gas mileage is for Europeans and lesbians. And a Republican drives a Chevy Suburban and always parks it in a space marked compact.
And now it's time to keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times, because it's time again for Randy's Rant.
Yes, everybody, it's rant time. Hey, old Randy.
Oh, I'm Randy. I'm Randy, and I'm ranting.
You sound a little like you're on sedatives.
Where do you want me to be? Oh, sorry.
Usually you're twirling, you know, you're twirling, getting into the music.
No, you told me to stop that. You said I'm giving people nightmares.
That's
twirling
true.
My tassels in concentric circles.
I was in the middle. It was
or
a cold sweat.
Sitting there in my jammies, you know.
Yes, girls. You know. That's right. That 8x10 could belong to you.
Oh, dear.
Dearie Mayor. Okay, Randy, what do you got for us?
Okay, this week, I'm actually ranting about something that's not to do with Donald Trump, or it's not to do with any of the usual things I rant about.
Yeah.
I'm ranting about rainbows. Okay, not Randy Rainbows, even though I'm Randy.
Not Randy, I love Randy Rainbow.
Okay. This week, a man died named Gilbert Baker. Mm. If you don't know Gilbert Baker, he was 65 when he passed away. He was the guy who 30 years ago created the iconic rainbow flag, which is now being used for, gosh, just about everything to do with marriage equality, with LGBTI rights. They put it on the White House in lights.
Right.
Everything to do with the rainbow is about all the colors of, you know, the diversity of our gay and straight and intersex and no sex community. Mm. Now, anyway, he was considered the gay Betsy Ross. He was a well-known activist, and people called him, you know, basically an icon of the gay community. Now, he actually made his original one by hand, stitched it together, tie-dyed it, and that was the original gay flag. And now it's just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's instantly recognized.
When did he do that, Randy?
30 years ago, 1978.
Wow.
Also 29 years ago. Okay?
Those were in the bad old days.
Yeah, it was the year that Harvey Milk, it was actually Harvey Milk himself who asked him to create something iconic.
Wow.
Absolutely. And then Milk, of course, was assassinated the following year. Yeah. So the first gay flag was a tie-dyed piece together. But you know what?
What?
This guy passes away, and a lot of your self-righteous, full of themselves people just piss on his grave. Well, I've got some people here who've come out and said Gilbert Baker should give the flag back to the religious community. The rainbow is God's gift. After Noah and the flood, it was the rainbow that told us that God would never again strike us all dead. What a lot of horseshit.
So basically, the rainbow belongs to them?
The rainbow belongs to religion, okay?
Stop repressing me! I'm a Christian! You're repressing me! You're taking my rainbows away!
They're saying that Gilbert Baker culturally appropriated the rainbow.
God, you faggot! Taking our rainbows away! What kind of madness?
The White Knight of CBS.
I just had to take a drink just now. That's terrible. That's just God, just the victimhood knows no end, does it?
It doesn't. The White Knight of Anderson Cooper, the White Knight, has come out on this as well. He did an item on this last week.
Oh, good.
And I would like you to play this as part of my rant because I never miss a good Anderson Cooper clip.
Yes, and every now and then you'll find one. Anderson Cooper on the gay flag and the passing of its creator. Here it is on Randy's Rant 175.
Now time for the ridiculous. Time before to add another name to the ridiculous tonight. Someone you probably never heard of. Her name is Dr. Jennifer Morse, and Morse is the founder of something called the Ruth Institute, which is a project of the National Organization for Marriage, which is a group that's very opposed to marriage equality for gays and lesbians. Dr. Morse is on the list tonight because she's upset about this, the rainbow flag. The rainbow flag that's been a symbol of the gay rights movement for decades now. Dr. Morse apparently believes that gay people have stolen the rainbow, and she wants it back. Moore says the rainbow represents God's promise to humanity, and it shouldn't be a symbol of gay pride. Now, the problem as I see it is that plenty of other folks seem to like the rainbow, too. And I'm not just talking about leprechauns and Lucky Charm eaters. Who's going to break the news to little Rainbow Bright that she's got to come up with a whole new gimmick? Do we have a picture of Rainbow Bright? I thought we did. Okay, a little slow on the uptake. But who's going to break the news to Rainbow Bright? What about Skittles? Skittles advocates actually claim they can taste the rainbow. That's got to really annoy Dr. Morse. And what about Judy Garland? She had a lock on the whole rainbow thing long before anybody else.
If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why can't I?
Yeah, why can't she indeed? Sorry, Dorothy, it looks like you and the happy little bluebirds are going to have to find something else to fly over because Dr. Morse wants the rainbow back. She's no shrinking violet. She's seeing red and it's also kind of blue that the rainbow has become a gay symbol. Aren't you glad I didn't say indigo? All right, now that that's out of the way, there has to be some way that this can be worked out. Maybe Dr. Morse can get three colors, gay and lesbian Americans can get three colors, and I don't know, maybe share green. Anyway, I think a court should finally make the decision on this, preferably a court presided over by the Honorable Roy G. Biv. Let's get real, though. When it comes down to it, nobody owns the rainbow. You can't copyright it. You can't commandeer it. You can just enjoy it. And there's plenty of rainbow to go around, Dr. Morse. Haven't you heard there's even double rainbows?
It's starting to even look like a triple rainbow. Oh, my God, it's full on. Double rainbow all the way across the sky. Oh, my God.
Oh, who was that one? Anyway, to sum up, I've said that was an accident. To sum up, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Most quandaries in life can be solved by looking to the nimble, philosophical mind belonging to one very wise soul, the soul that dwells within Mr. Kermit the Frog.
Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
So maybe Dr. Jennifer Morse will never make a rainbow connection with gay and lesbian Americans, but her color commentary has won her the pot of gold at the end of tonight's Ridiculous.
Oh, I'll get you and your little dog, too.
That there frog over there is queer as a $10 bill.
Yeah, the rainbow.
I'll get my gun.
And he does it. Can you squeal like Miss Piggy? Can you? You got soft, warty, wart covered hands.
Imagine a gay Kermit the Frog. I'm really thinking that.
Well, he spent all of his life with somebody's fist up his ass. So yeah, I think he
walks around your house going, "Tell me." Oh, sorry.
Oh, yes. Kids, they're really upset.
They evidently like it to get Kermit the Frog. I don't know why that came on. But Kermit will walk around your house and go, "Tell me this was a gift." Just, he'll come up to you in the middle of the day. You're not wearing...
Oh, you made yourself laugh.
You're not wearing that, are you? You know? Yes, Kermit is obviously just gay. Because he's taking the rainbow for himself. That cheered me up to no end.
I know, I thought, because you were really down from that opening.
I was, you know, yeah.
Wag the frog. Yeah, wag the frog. Okay, now.
That was a religious nut job of the week, so I don't know how you got to top that one.
No. I have a
bigger one. Okay, fine.
Okay, Bill. Yes, I do have a bigger one.
Yes.
And what I have is a commentator who I've had before. His name is Tristan Blaze.
Okay.
Has found a bishop in the African state, a religious man in Ghana, a state in Africa.
So this is a religious guy in Ghana.
His name is Obinim, Bishop Obinim.
Of course it is.
And we've had him before.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's the guy that sold photos of himself in heaven for $5,000 a pop. Now, Bishop Obinim has made an outrageous claim.
Oh, my God. What is it?
Well, I want the listeners to hear it.
Oh, my God. Okay, here it is, the religious nut job of the week for 175. Bishop Obinim from Ghana. Okay, here it is.
A bishop claims to make men's penises larger by massaging them with his hands. Ghanaian preacher Daniel Obinim has been filmed performing a ritual where he moves around a room full of men, grabbing them each by the crotch. I've seen some gay porns that start that way. I'm thinking this dude was getting these guys down for some, you know, some gay for pay, possibly. In some cases, he will keep hold of their penises and give them a little shake. You know, it's like a handshake. It's a respect thing. That's how we do it in Ghana. You know, we grab our, you know, friends' dicks and be like, "Hey, how you doing? Nice penis." Graciously, always graciously, when you're dealing with a bishop or a bishop, it's got to be gracious. He also offers to massage women's breasts in order to enlarge them too. Well, I've been doing that for years with my wife, and they haven't gotten really bigger. They've gotten bigger due to her, you know, getting pregnant with our two kids, but me massaging them, it hasn't worked. In a scene broadcast on his own channel, this man has his own fucking TV channel. His own TV channel. Obinim TV. I want to search for this channel now. I want to look at this shit. The bishop says, "If you do not like the looks of any part of your body, come to me." So he's like a plastic surgeon. He's like the Surgeon General of Beverly Hills, basically. Or the Plastic Surgeon General of Beverly Hills. "What do you want that I can't offer? If you want big buttocks, I can do it for you." So he's like Sir Mix-a-Lot, see? He likes big butts and he cannot lie. "If you want big breasts, I can help. If you have a small manhood, I can change them all when I come."
That bishop kind of likes his work, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Massaging the lady's breasts to make them bigger. Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but if somebody massaged my, well, you know. I might get bigger.
It's bad enough people picture you with your jammies on. I don't need this visual imagery in my head. I just don't. And why is it always sex with you and that bishop?
I can't let my fans down.
Well, no, I'll tell you something. I could just see a middle-class couple in Iowa, and this bishop takes over the local church. And yeah, he starts his thing, and about halfway through, he brings up this shit. And you see this guy who looks like Mike Pence turning to his wife, going, did he just say breasts?
Yeah. Yeah,
wants me to take down my pants. I don't know why, honey. Why? Yeah.
Can you massage her?
Why can't we just have Sunday school like the other churches? Why can't we just do a manger play or something like that? Why do I always have to take my pants off every time we go to church? Ned Flanders would be very happy, I guess.
I think old left-handed Ned.
Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. You're awful.
I'll try to make these a bit
you're
cleaner
awful,
next time.
You're awful, Muriel. You're awful. Yeah. Okay, well, listen, we've got just... we're not doing a tinfoil hat today.
No, we're having a tribute.
We're having a tribute to one of the greatest stand-up comics ever, and we're going to have that tribute right after this message.
Today, President Trump defended Fox News host Bill O'Reilly amid revelations that O'Reilly has been accused by several women of sexual harassment. Of course, it's just the latest example of the symbiotic relationship between Fox News and Trump. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. You probably have at least a passing familiarity with Fox News if you've ever visited an elderly relative or gotten drunk at a bar in a small-town Applebee's. But before we get to the sexual harassment scandal, it's important to understand just how influential Fox News is right now, particularly with one viewer, the President of the United States. In fact, just this past Monday, Trump once again started his day by repeating things he had just seen on the network, tweeting, "Such amazing reporting on unmasking and the crooked scheme against us by Fox and Friends." And Fox News, from multiple sources, there was electronic surveillance of Trump and people close to Trump. This is unprecedented at FBI. He actually tagged the FBI in his tweet. It's only a matter of time before Trump starts conducting diplomacy via Yelp. North Korea, very crazy, bad hair, 4 stars. But of course, it would make sense that Trump would trust the Fox and Friends, since they routinely give him sycophantic coverage, like when they interviewed him in February and spent part of it taking a White House tour. They even got to see, in Trump's word, a surprise guest.
Got a nice place.
That's a good place.
Do you know where you're going yet?
I do. I really have it pretty well figured out. We're actually going to make a trip downstairs, and you may have a surprise downstairs. But I wonder who's in here. Let's see who's in here. We'll never figure this out. So this is a room where I believe you're going to find the First Lady. Oh, hello, First Lady.
Hi.
Wow.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
What are you up to?
Just working.
Just working? On an escape tunnel. So that's basically Trump's relationship with Fox News in a nutshell. They give him glowing, unquestioning coverage, and in return, he gives them unparalleled access. And they'll go to absurd lengths to defend him, like on Friday, when Fox News host Eric Bolling tried to compare President Obama's first quarter in office, which was dominated by the financial crisis, to President Trump's first quarter, a comparison so dumb, even his fellow panelists started laughing at him.
The first quarter in the books yesterday or today, right? Last day of the quarter. So we did a little bit of a little scorecard going, comparing the Trump administration to Obama. One quarter in, consumer confidence. To 27. Look at these numbers.
Oh, man.
I'll take a full screen again. Here, how about this? Unemployment 4.7, 8.3.
You
how about
this
one?
This with
average home price. Oh, my gosh.
So it's not
even close. 390,000 versus 258.
So this is actually all from Obama.
You know, I'd even argue Trump's a better president than George Washington. Just take a look. Washington had 16 states. Trump has 50. Washington had wooden teeth. Trump's are real. And while Washington never told a lie, Trump has told all of them. Suck it, George. In return for that kind of glowing coverage, Trump often goes out of his way to advertise for Fox News shows like he did last week when he tweeted, watch Fox and Friends now on Podesta in Russia and watch Judge Jeanine on Fox News tonight at 9 p.m. The president literally just recommends TV shows now. Our police are doing a fantastic job tonight on an all-new Blue Bloods. Instead of a Bible, Trump should have been sworn in on a TV guide. So Fox is basically the closest thing we have to state TV. In fact, the relationship between Trump and Fox News has turned into something of a mutual appreciation society where they heap praise on one another. At one point, Trump praised Fox and Friends, and then that clip was played on Fox and Friends where it blew Steve Doocy's mind.
Fox and Friends in the morning, they're very honorable people.
Wow. What do you think about that?
It was like Steve Doocy did a giant bong rip right before watching that clip. What do you think of that? Now, to be fair, there are a few Fox News anchors who have covered the Trump administration skeptically and subjected his team to rigorous interviews like Chris Wallace, Shepard Smith, and others. But, of course, Trump doesn't like to quote those guys on his Twitter feed. Instead, he prefers people like the Fox and Friends and, of course, one of his favorite sources, Bill O'Reilly. In fact, you might remember that when Trump tweeted out of nowhere in January that he might send the feds to Chicago, it had been uttered nearly verbatim an hour earlier by O'Reilly. And then, of course, there was the time Trump saw a Fox News segment about Sweden and suggested there had been a terrorist incident there, even though there was not. O'Reilly covered the incident by interviewing a guest named Niels Bildt, whom O'Reilly identified as a Swedish defense and national security advisor. There's just one problem. It turns out that guy has not lived in Sweden for a very long time, and no one within the Swedish security community seems to know him. It was almost as embarrassing as the time O'Reilly thought he was interviewing Sweden's prime minister.
People who are raised in Sweden feel safe? Is that what you're saying?
You get this lazy daisy for making a pumpkin gooch.
It's an excellent point. O'Reilly's routinely defended Trump, even when Trump has done the indefensible. Like during the campaign when O'Reilly declined to play parts of the infamous Access Hollywood tape on which Trump brags about committing sexual assault, dismissing it as mere crude guy talk.
2005, Donald Trump was doing a segment with Access Hollywood. He was speaking with the entertainment reporter Billy Bush privately about women. The Washington Post somehow acquired that audio tape. I'm not going to play too much of it because it's crude guy talk.
That's right. It's crude guy talk. Which is the same reason I'm not going to play this Bill O'Reilly clip.
We'll do it live, it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Thing sucks.
I just said I wasn't going to play it. What happened? Mix up in the booth? Hey, well, when there's a mix up in the booth, I say, that's cool, dudes. And if it seemed outrageous to you at the time that O'Reilly would try to dismiss Trump's apparent sexual assault confession as crude guy talk, it might make a little more sense now after the news that broke over the weekend.
Less than 1 year after a sexual harassment scandal brought down its chairman and CEO, Fox News is facing more explosive accusations, this time surrounding primetime heavyweight Bill O'Reilly. The New York Times reports five women have now received payouts from O'Reilly or Fox News since 2004, totaling $13 million. After reports of sexual harassment or other inappropriate behavior from Bill O'Reilly, when you read the details, five women paid out $13 million. How does this man still have a job?
Five women, $13 million. Thoughts, Steve?
Wow.
So far, Fox News has not taken O'Reilly off the air, but that could change soon because now that these settlements are public, the news is starting to hit Fox News where they care most, their wallet.
The backlash continues today for one of the most outspoken hosts on television. More than 20 major advertisers now pulling their spots from the O'Reilly Factor.
Lexus, Bayer, GlaxoSmithKline are some of the latest companies to pull commercials from the program.
Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Hyundai have all announced they're pulling ads from O'Reilly's show.
Soon the only advertisers left on his show are going to be Ivanka Trump's clothing line and Steve Bannon's skin worsener. And yet, in spite of all of this, you'll never guess who came to O'Reilly's defense today, Donald Trump. Trump told the New York Times, personally, I think he shouldn't have settled because you should have taken it all the way. I don't think Bill did anything wrong. Of course, not settling and taking it all the way is what got O'Reilly in trouble in the first place. Now, of course, this is not an isolated incident. O'Reilly's former boss, Roger Ailes, was ousted after a sexual harassment scandal. And even after that, O'Reilly was a vocal defender of Fox News. In fact, last year, after Megyn Kelly wrote a book discussing the Ailes scandal, O'Reilly was asked about it on CBS and became so irate, it freaked out the host of the show.
You're not interested in sexual harassment?
I'm not interested in basically litigating something that is finished that makes my network look bad, okay? I'm not interested in making my network look bad at all. That doesn't interest me one bit. I've got a kid's book that I want millions of kids to look at. That's what I'm interested in, not making my network look bad.
But if your network is affected by it.
Excuse me, I got a little
flip all right.
here.
Nora and I have.
Are you okay?
Are you okay? Because you're acting like a lunatic. Also, Bill O'Reilly had a children's book? What was it called? Fox and Socks and Nothing Else? Ailes reportedly created a culture of intimidation and retaliation at Fox News, a culture fueled by paranoia and suspicion. In fact, Ailes was reportedly so paranoid that he told many people at Fox that the Clintons have tried to assassinate him. Ailes said he's been trained by the CIA. CIA, the Culinary Institute of America? Dude, you don't exactly look like Jason Bourne. You look like Jabba the Hutt ate Jason Bourne. So this is the network. This is the network that the president relies on for information, a network with an archaic culture of sexual harassment, fear, and intimidation that also serves, with a few exceptions, as his propaganda arm. Or, as Steve Doocy might put it...
Wow.
This has been a closer look.
Yes, folks, it's that time again. Time to discuss the news and commentary we listen to because we hate our own heads. It's our tinfoil hat segment tonight.
Yes, Randy, our tinfoil hat tonight is not a tinfoil hat at all, but
no,
a hockey puck.
Yeah.
Because you dummy, you hockey puck.
Yeah.
Because
the king of the insult.
The king of insult comedy. The yeah. absolute wizard of stand-up. One of yeah. the funniest men ever to stand up in front of a stage alone and make people laugh died. And his name is Don Rickles. Yeah, at 90 years old, he...
good innings, yeah.
He passed away. I got to say that one of the people that I have... You know, watched since... You remember those old Dean Martin roasts?
Yeah, or the Johnny Carson show?
The Johnny Carson show. He was on Letterman all the time. But I first saw him during the Dean Martin roasts. And I was young. And I just couldn't believe that this guy...
Well, you're not that old now.
Well,
come
I'm kind of old. I'm old enough to remember that in high school. Rickles was just astounding. You know, he's so friggin' quick. He would own The Tonight Show. One of my favorite segments is when Sinatra appeared on The Tonight Show one night. And I think that Don did about 15 minutes of stuff on him and the Mafia that I've noticed. It was like some of the most funny stuff I've ever heard in my life. But we both share a love for Don Rickles, don't we?
Yep.
Okay. What are your memories of the Don?
Well, I mean, I he's just got that one of the ugliest faces. I thought he was like a male Joan Rivers. I mean, he could say so many bad things about somebody, but you would still love him.
Oh, yeah.
Love him.
Yeah. And you know what people don't understand is that he was also a pretty fucking good actor. He was a really good actor. Remember Kelly's Heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. Remember Casino? He was great, you know?
A lot of funny comedians, Pesci, a lot of those people, can still turn in a great dramatic performance.
Yeah, and if you look at, by the way, his closest friend and the person he always talked about traveling with on the Carson show was Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine two people more completely
the
opposite.
The man of the slow burn, yeah.
The man of the slow burn. And those are the two, my favorite stand-up comedians was Bob Newhart and Don Rickles. So instead of our tinfoil hat tonight.
Chalk and cheese.
Chalk and cheese.
They couldn't be more different.
Yeah.
Don Rickles and Bob Newhart couldn't be more different.
Absolutely. So in tribute to the guy, the man. The master of the insult, the hockey puck, the guy who ruled over stand-up for 90, well, not 90 years, but for a good, I'd say 60.
Well, one of the best tribute I read on his passing was, you do not want to have ever heckled Don Rickles.
No.
You would not live. The ambulance couldn't get there fast enough.
That's right. And as a stand-up who had been heckled before, and I did stand-up for a time during the 80s, I used to idolize Don Rickles for that because he would tear them up. He would just tear them up.
That's
awful. Look, give money so I can get a cough button here. But anyway, here is Don Rickles during one of the classic Dean Martin roasts, and he tees off on Governor Ronald Reagan.
That's right. Reagan was sitting right next to the podium.
See, Reagan's right next to the podium. So I think this is about 1980 or something. I don't know. It might be the 60s. I have no idea. But it is absolutely a thing to behold. Here he is at the height of his form, Don Rickles and Ronald Reagan with the Dean Martin roast. Here it is.
And now we come to Don Rickles. You know, a lot of people wonder why Don is so mean. There's a reason for that. You see, he's been that way ever since he found out Eva Braun was two-timing him. There he is, the star of the last 10 days of Rickles, Don Rickles.
The greatest thing I can say to Governor Reagan or Regan, whatever they call, what do they call you, Governor? The greatest moment I remember in your career was when you said to Pat O'Brien, the Gipper is dying. And I got an uncle that thought it was a fish. Now the Gentile gentleman here had no idea, a kipper. That's a Jewish fish, don't be dumb, I hate a dumb guy. If my people didn't go, okay. There's always one dumb guy in the audience. And you're probably important. My luck, you'll be the president of NBC. Isn't this fun, Governor, huh? Better than trying to hit Jess Unruh with your car. Those of you from all around the United States, Jess Unruh is a great Democratic candidate who opposed many things that the governor did, and he's a great politician, and the governor will be the first to agree. And that's what makes our country so fantastic, that we have different people, as I do. I stand on a stage or on a lectern, or I stand here next to Dean Martin, one of the great guys, and I say this from my heart, Dean, you have a problem. And the governor is the great politician of all time. He laughs at anything. My brother died. I tell you out there, America, our governor is dumb. That's a joke, Governor. Can you see it when this show is off the air and the governor's over the room with three guys from the state troopers? All right, Jew, let's hear the joke about the governor. Let's hear the one about him being dumb. Let's go. I don't know who you are in the middle, but you're starting to get on my nerves. There's one guy with a honker that's sucking up his lip. My luck, this will be Richard Nixon's bodyguard. They talked about you, my dear friend and honorable governor. And, sir, we've never met formally, as we've said before. But I will never forget the stories I've heard that you standing on the White House lawn, throwing rocks on Richard Nixon's window going, Dick! Don't beg, don't beg. Tell him like a man. You're an actor. Phony it up. Just stand on the lawn and say, move out of there! Is this too fast for you, Dean? Dean Martin came from Youngstown, Ohio. Is that right, Dean? Steubenville. Why, that's better? You, Governor, are a great man. You can tell because you don't see many governors with clip-on bow ties. Hey, fun is fun. There are many people that are planted around here to look like they enjoy this. But Dean Martin said to me when Governor Reagan or Regan, whatever they call you.
Reagan.
I don't care. What do I care what they call you? You're the governor, and if I got a cousin getting the chair, you better make that phone call. But I say this from my heart, Governor. I've met you once in the hallway at NBC, as you remember. And I'll never forget your words. Get out of the way, kid. I kid you, sir. You are a politician. Black, white, Jew, Gentile. We're all working for one cause. To figure out how you became governor.
Oh, God rest his soul, ladies and gentlemen. The great Don Rickles, Mr. Warmth.
Don Rickles.
Dead at 90. And I think we're running a little over time because I couldn't turn that off because I still get a kick out of it.
Bill, it's your show. Don't worry about it. I think all of our listeners are still with us.
We're all working to figure out why you here.
How you became governor.
You're from Steubenville. Oh, I don't know, Anchorville. Like, that's better? It makes me laugh. Oh, the days. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, folks, you can over at thebillshow.net. Everything's Bill Show in one place. And, of course, at expatprogressive.podbean.com is where you can pick up the show. You also can hear us on iTunes, Podbay FM, and Stitcher Radio. That's right, Stitcher Radio.
And on our Facebook page.
Leave a note. Talk to us.
Yeah, The Bill Show on XPR. Absolutely. On Facebook.
On our Facebook page. And, of course, you can sponsor us. We'd love to have a few dollars to pay the bills around here, keep the lights on. So if you can, give what you can. Now we're going
Give as much as you can, because until Bill gets a certain amount, I won't see any of it.
We're not making a profit here. We'll do this anyway, but if you could afford five bucks a month, that'd be great. That'd be so helpful to us, because we're not rich people. We're just a bunch of guys. So taking us out today, what do we have? We have a little Bruce Springsteen, ladies and gentlemen, from his last concert tour. We hope that you enjoy it. Until next time, we'll see ya. Yeah. Say goodbye, Randy. Bye.
Goodbye, Randy. Bye.
Great morning, last bit soothed shame. Mother Dell, closer to the grave. Shackled and wrong.